go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, Ben. Welcome to Car Stuff.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for dropping by Car Stuff and hosting it with me again.
No problem.
I always appreciate it. We talked earlier in an episode that I hope has already come out. It has, and is 16 too young?
Yeah.
We briefly touched on driver's education programs.
Yes, we did.
And we also, during one of our Nuts and Bolts episodes, were asked, we had a question that touched on driver's ed.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking today we could talk just a little bit about driver's education programs in, I guess, the U.S., and we've got some in other countries as well.
Okay. You've got stuff about other countries then, because I've got some local stuff, really.
Okay.
Some of the nuts and bolts of driver education, just the program itself.
Oh, clever.
I see what you did there. See?
Now, let's go ahead, and first, we always want to get our definition out of the way. A driver's education program in any country, state, municipality that has one is basically a program designed to teach people not to get in accidents and to be safe drivers.
That's right.
Sounds relatively simple, right? Relatively cut and dry.
Yeah, prerequisite for a license.
And, for instance, in some U.S. states, when you're required to take these classes, you're required to take them as a student before your driving age, and they actually won't give you a permit or a license. Now, when we talk about, we're not going to go too far down into a bunch of details on everything, because these programs and the way they're implemented can differ greatly.
Oh, yeah. They're dramatically different from state to state. And, well, not so much in what they require, but the way that they're laid out, like what they allow you to do after the course. Sometimes you can take this course and then that, you know, the experience that you gain through your driver's education course, it's documented with the state, and they allow, you know, the right signatures to happen that say this person can be excused or waived from the driving portion of the test.
Yes.
Now they all have to take the written portion of the test, but some have you do that, some don't have you do that. Others, you know, some last 3 days, others last 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Some, you know, it's just there's this. Some cost, you know, a certain amount of money, like let's say $30. Others cost $180.
Sure.
They're just all over the place as far as what's allowed, where, and you know, what each state recognizes as being, you know, officially what they require for the permit. Did that make any sense? Sounds
that
like
did.
I'm rambling about all that.
No. That did. You're going over several pieces of information.
Yeah, we've got all this stuff, I mean, laid out in front of us, so it gets a bit confusing, but we'll try to plod through it with some of the, the not averages, but more or less like, you know, this is basically what you can expect when you're going for a driver's ed.
Yeah, the general stuff you can expect. We're gonna cruise through that, and I think an excellent place to start would be required driving time.
Sure.
You want to start there?
Yeah, sure. Do you happen to know the – I mean, it's based in hours usually.
Right, like a pilot's license. That's a great way to think about it.
That's a very good way to think about it. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, it's usually 30 hours of driver training.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes they'll have you do night driving as well. Now, I didn't have to do that when I was young.
Yeah, we're old fogies.
Yeah.
Now, officially, because I did not have to do night driving for my driver's ed.
What do you say?
Old fogies?
What?
Old codgers?
Eh?
I'm sorry. I'm in your lawn.
Speaking of the horn in my ear.
Yes.
No. I didn't have to do any night driving, which I now that I think about it, what was up with that? Because
it's a good idea.
It really is. It's a great idea. A lot of courses will, you know, in your 30 hours of driving, something like 5 or 6 hours of that has to be accomplished at night. And it makes perfect sense, because it's dramatically different to drive at night. I mean, it kind of, I don't know, it allows you to see what it's like to be on the road, you know, when the headlights are coming against you. You can't read the street signs maybe until you're a little closer than you would be in the daylight hours. You know, watching for pedestrians is even harder. It's just a dramatically different environment, and I think it's a good idea.
And then you'll also generally learn things like the federal driving laws, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'll learn when you can do things like take a ride on red. Mm-hmm. You learn when you can do things like, okay, just again, pet peeve. I know we got the demons out in our podcast on pet peeves, but Scott, mm-hmm. the people need to know when the traffic lights are out and one street intersection is blinking red and the other one's blinking yellow, you don't stop at the yellow one.
That's right.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry I raised my voice.
You feel better?
I do. I feel
stop yelling at me.
I will stop yelling at you unless I see you stop
now,
at that light.
You know what's interesting, though? I mean, one quick thing that we should mention is that this Joshua's Law.
Yes.
Because Joshua's Law is the one where – this is where the 30 hours came in.
Mm-hmm.
Driver's training before you get – this is – you classify for what they call a Class D license mm-hmm. here in Georgia. And this was – Joshua's Law is in response to a youngster. He was, what, 18?
Mm-hmm.
Youngster,
yes,
listen to me. He was a young guy. He was 18, I think, and tragically involved in a fatality. I think he hydroplaned, hit a tree or something like mm-hmm. that in 2003. Again, 18 years old, and the idea was that he didn't know what to do when his car hydroplaned or his truck hydroplaned.
Because he hadn't received education for it.
Yeah, at that point, you know, the driver's education was far less strict or less, I don't know, you just had to do less in order to get that permit or your driver's license. And didn't have the training that he needed to understand what happens to a car when hydroplanes or when you're losing control. And... of course, unfortunately, it ended in his death, but his parents have set up this foundation, mm-hmm. Which you know really strengthened some of the laws and restrictions for getting a learner's permit in mm-hmm. the state of Georgia and, I believe, nationwide. I think Joshua's Law is nationwide.
Yes, and, as of 2007.
Okay, so that is where we get the 30 hours of driving and mm-hmm. you know X number of hours at night and you know all these requirements before you get your actual license. So once you go to driver's training, mm-hmm. which is what this course is. I mean, 30 hours. Plus you're talking about – and that's just driving experience. That's behind the wheel.
Just driving, yeah.
You also have, course study. You'll have lectures. You'll have probably, the videos, mm-hmm. That you have to watch, driving videos. And, just in parking lot type experiences.
Sure.
But then on the road experience is 30 hours. And from that point, you can take your signed certificate of completion of this course, and you can take it to – the DMV, mm-hmm. and then you have to you have to apply for a permit, and that's where. See, there's several steps to this now.
Sure,
it's a little bit harder than when we were younger.
Yeah,
you apply for a permit, and you have to take their written test and their mm-hmm. driving test, and then once you pass both of those, then you have your permit. And you have to have that for how long is it?
It's like a year.
A year and a day.
It's around.
Like
yeah,
that.
It's
there's
around
a weird.
That.
There's a weird thing like mm-hmm. that. I think it's a year and a day, and. Then you can apply for a driver's license, which you again have to take a written test. And I don't know if there's I would guess there's a driving test at that point. I think so.
Yeah, it would seem so.
And during the time when you have the permit, there are some restrictions as well. So when you have this, what they call a Class D license here in Georgia,
mm-hmm.
the first rule is that you can't drive between 12 midnight and 6 a.m.
You
with your permit.
Curfew.
Yeah, you have a curfew. And during the first 6 months of this permit, you're only allowed one immediate family member that can ride in the vehicle with you. Only immediate family members can ride in the
right.
vehicle with you. During the second 6 months, only one unrelated passenger who also is under 21 years old can be in the vehicle with you one time. So they're limiting the number of friends you can pick up along the way.
Sure.
And after the first and second 6 month period, so you're getting close to the end here, only three unrelated passengers under 21 years of age can ride in the vehicle with you.
So you still can't drive a school bus full of children.
No, exactly right, exactly right.
But don't you think that's a pretty good way to go about it? This graduated approach.
I honestly do. I think that's really good because you know what the whole thing about unrelated passengers, right? That's a distracted driving situation.
Yeah, I could see that.
You've got a lot of friends in the car with you. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of distraction going on
sure.
there. So they want them to gradually learn how to deal with that. And I think this is a well-laid-out program, really.
And then on top of that, in several states, you'll be required to take a separate course, like in Georgia – drivers are required to take the alcohol and drug awareness program.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that you have to take if you're under 18.
I never had to do that.
Well, you didn't, you weren't in Georgia.
Well, I know, and I'm not. I'm not a youngster either.
Yep. So,
but that's something brand new to me. I didn't know that they had to take that until I read this. The ADAP card is what they're issued, right?
Yes, and they give you a card, and you have to take it to the DMV, which we call DDS here, Department of Driver Services, mm-hmm. I think. And that once you present that, it doesn't really do anything but function as a mandatory education barrier.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To make sure that you know what's going on before you get your license. And I'm going to go ahead and say it. I think that these things are moving in the right direction to have people out on the road more, especially driving at night. I mean, looking back, Scott, I can't believe that we weren't asked to do that.
I can't either, because that's a situation the first time it happens to you. Mm-hmm. You're on edge. When you're a kid driving, I mean, you know, you may think, you know, it's just that much different that, you know, you're a little bit apprehensive about it, no matter how tough you want to seem about, you know, driving, that, you know, you can handle it.
Right.
There's still a little something unusual about it at first when you first set out on the road and it's dark.
Man, I remember getting out with my permit and just being perplexed that I was driving the exact speed limit, and I dared not go a mile over. Mm-hmm. And there was a line of cars behind me, and people in them were just so angry with me.
Oh, yeah.
And it's an eye-opening experience. I'm glad it didn't happen at night. I guess, you know, when someone told me, I was talking to a younger friend of mine, and he told me when he was taking his driver education course at his school, which was in Tennessee, he said that it used to aggravate him because he didn't like sitting in the class and listening to this instructor, because apparently the instructor was not the best public speaker.
Okay.
Which is, you know, fair, I know, if you're sitting there for a marathon classroom session.
Yep, which I was too.
I think a lot of people are. And, you know, these are high school kids, so they're usually not used to the three-hour lecture classes that would be more common in college.
Sure.
Get used to it, guys. It just goes on.
It's a taste of it.
So he said that the way he was able to get through it is, he said, let me think of it like I'm studying for the SAT. Mm-hmm. Let me think of it like there's this study program and I'm just required to study, and not dying in a car accident is the test. And
that's the reward for all of this.
I think I think it was a very intense way to look at it, but it kept him awake in class.
Oh, yeah. That's a good way to do it.
It is. And I have to ask, do you think that these are going to change, these driving?
Well, I don't think so. There's one way that they're already being kind of there's a modification to this already that I don't know if I agree with or not, but maybe.
Lay it on me.
Online driver's ed.
Online driver's ed.
Online driver's ed.
Yes. Okay.
Now, it's easy enough to look up.
Mm-hmm.
Driversed.com, and you can find it in your own state because they've got a selection for all the states. What happens is you take the test and, you know, all that, you know, all the book learning.
All that jazz.
Yeah, you take that online at your leisure, kind of, you know, just the way you could take the college courses online now.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it comes down to the actual driving test, they, of course, send somebody over, a representative from the company. You schedule time, you know, to get into the vehicle, and you actually do take a physical driving test, which is good. But everything is done online, and really, there's nothing wrong with that, I guess. I mean, you're still getting the same information as long as you're the one who's honestly taking the test, and, you know, there's no funny business going on.
You mean no Google answers?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the thing is, you got to prove it. You got to prove that you know what you're doing when you're in the car. So it all comes down to, you know, you're just, how honest are you? I mean, they know if you know it or not, or if you've studied or not. Mm-hmm. They know for sure, and I'm sure that they're quizzing you a little bit as you're driving too.
Sure.
And then they send you the certificate via mail, and that's good enough to take into your, you know, it's notarized, it's authorized, it's a legal document to take into the DMV or the DDS like we have, and that's a valid certificate.
Okay.
So, I don't know. That's one way to do it.
I gotta say, I see where you're going with this, bro. I think it's a good idea for a certain segment of the population, like kids who don't have a car, or people who, yeah, anyone who doesn't have transportation to a place where they could take driver's ed.
Yeah.
It does make me a little bit nervous to picture all those people who I'm sure have taken an online driver's test and cheated.
Yes.
Because I'm sure there are a few. I'm not naming names.
Yeah. Just percentage-wise, there's bound to be somebody that
sure, statistically
didn't take the test.
And the question then, I guess, would be, are the disadvantages outweighed by the advantages here? Or I don't know. It's a tough one.
Yeah, it's a difficult – yeah, I don't know. You can never get a true answer to that.
I would hope, though, that these online courses are – as you said, they're supplemented by real-world driving, but I would hope that they don't go too much further into the online thing, because how long will it be then until we have this immersive virtual reality driving test?
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, you gotta keep one thing in mind. And I thought the same way, you know, when I first read about it, and then the more I thought about it, you know, once you go to the DMV, then you're faced with their written test, and you're faced with their driving test. And from that point forward, you've got, you know, an instructor right there with you the whole time, or you're in the Secretary of State office or wherever you happen to be. So, you know, you can skate through on the online stuff in a way. You know, you still have to prove yourself in the car.
Right.
But then there's a point where you have to do it yourself. And I don't think that, you know, you'd be doing yourself any kind of justice if you were to fake your way through the online course and then you know, fail the test the first time you get the DMV, and then fail again, and then, you know, the third time get it, or whatever it would be.
No one to blame but yourself,
yeah,
buddy.
Exactly. Now, there's one other quick thing that I want to mention before we wrap up here, but there's also some things that these I can't tell you, Ben. I just don't understand this, but there's driver's ed games that you can play online. Have you seen these?
Yeah, I didn't play them.
You didn't try it? Impossible. They're difficult. I can't do it. I don't know if it's. I'm gonna say there's something wrong with my keyboard.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe they're like the. Like, I'm gonna be such a nerd now, Scott. Don't make fun of me.
Yeah.
Maybe they're like the Piper Maru thing. Do you? In Star Trek, there is, and I'm not a Trekkie by any means. In Star Trek, there's this thing that I believe it's called Piper.
Why are you wearing those Spock ears then?
They just look good on me, dude.
Okay.
They go with my – I got the Vulcan eyebrow.
I admit.
Okay. Thank you, man.
They do.
Well, thank you. That's a feather in my hat. But what is the strange thing about the Piper Maru idea is that it's this simulation that is designed to be unwinnable. And so captains or would-be captains at the academy have to take this scenario, and they have to try to beat – an unbeatable system. Mm-hmm. Would a driver's ed game be like this?
No,
is that what it was like?
No, it's not like that.
It's just really hard.
Here's the thing. Like, it's just like an up, down, space bar, you know, that type of thing for acceleration, left, right, you know, that type of thing. I just couldn't seem to get the coordination down.
To me,
nothing like trying to get a car in a parallel. I mean, I can get a car in a parallel parking space easy. It's just the trying to do it online with my up, down, left, right keys.
Yeah.
No way. I couldn't do it. I'd smash into oncoming traffic. You know, there's other situations where you can try to, you know, they want you to turn left at a four-way intersection, you know, with pedestrians and other cars coming through. And it's just, it was kind of silly. I mean, it's fun to, you know, it's a little time waster thing.
Yeah.
And I suppose if you practice, you know, that you'd be able to get good at this thing. But,
well, it's probably more to teach them to be aware, like the concepts, you know, if you're going left, watch for that kid with her dog or something.
Nothing like the Atari 2600 that I play at home, so I couldn't imagine how, you know, somebody could do this well.
Well, what could match that Atari you have at home? Not Ataris in general,
it's
specifically
nothing like,
yours.
Nothing like Pong.
It's
and therefore I don't like
it. I'm going to print that out and put that on your desk. All right, so first, I want to apologize to everybody who is a Star Trek fan if I screwed up the description. I thought it was Piper Maru. If I am wrong, I'm so sorry. Please don't think I was trying to be offensive. Please pardon the ignorance there. All right, so Scott, I feel like we've given a pretty good overview of this. You want to wrap up?
No. Oh. We've got one more thing to cover.
Okay, sure.
Is it true that you call your Monte Carlo the Enterprise?
Well played, Scott Benjamin.
Well, with the ears, it works.
Yes.
No,
Scott, I have called it that in the past. I am going through a bit of a Star Trek phase. Mm-hmm. I will try not to make it impact our professional relationship.
Too late.
I would refer to it. I would refer it if I would prefer it, I'm trying to say, if you would not refer to my car by its full name, the Enterprise, because you might make it feel like it's in trouble. I go with Easy E.
Easy E.
M Sizzle.
Very nice.
Couple,
okay.
There's, you know, you can play
very
around.
Very nice. Very nice. On to listener mail.
On to listener mail.
Ben, we got a quick one here.
Okay.
Kind of short. And this is a guy, his name is Alton from Manchester, Connecticut.
Hi, Alton.
Alton. Oh, calls himself Al.
Hi, Al.
No, let's go with Al. Says, this is you, unusual. It says, still love your show. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Well, thank you.
Maybe despite what he just heard or something.
Sorry about whatever happened.
He says, note on your project car. I have I bought a 67 Chrysler Newport.
Nice.
You know that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, he says, great choice. I've owned three of them in the past, two 67s and one 68.
Wow.
I've been in love with the 67 Newport two-door ever since, and that's what I've got. Says he wish he could get his hands on one, although he doesn't have that kind of time, and neither do I, Al, but I'm trying it. he says he wanted to make a note, though, that the original engine that came in the car, the 383, which I have the 440, he mentioned that he thinks that the 383 was a much better engine than the 440.
Oh.
And by definition, the custom wasn't the muscle car version. Oh, that's the strict muscle car version.
Yeah.
And he's right.
He is right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I referred to it as a muscle car or not, but feels like one to me. When I drive it, but
maybe not by the strictest definition.
Not by the strict definition, no. So he wants me to post some pictures, so we'll see if I can get something up, you know, soon about that.
That'd be cool.
But yeah, good point. And you know, you like the 383 better than the 440? That's fine. I mean, that's your opinion, I guess. I've heard the same thing, though. I've heard a lot of people say that the original 383 engine in the Chryslers it was just a fantastic engine.
Really?
So can't argue with Al on this one.
So it might not be so much a case of good versus bad, but great versus good.
I don't know. I'm not really sure because, I mean, I've always heard there's no replacement for displacement. Hmm. And here's a bigger engine. It's, you know, got some performance parts to it. And, of course, the thing sounds like, you know, unbelievably.
Sounds like a pack of attacking tigers.
Unbelievably strong.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've heard good things about the 383 engine. So if anybody else has any opinion about that or anything to offer about the 383 versus the 440, just let me know.
And if people do want to check out pictures, when those pictures come up, where would they go?
Probably, you know what? I don't know if I'll put them on the blog or if I'll, you know, post them on Facebook. I'm not sure. It's going to be somewhere.
So the way to find it is to check us out at all these different places. We make ourselves available online. That came out sounding weird. But the point is, Facebook, we're there as Car Stuff. Twitter, we're Car Stuff HSW. We've also got a blog on our website, HowStuffWorks.com. And along with that, we've got the answer to nearly everything automotive. On the off chance, and you're not going to believe me, Scott, but I swear it has happened at least twice. People have not been able to find what they're looking for, and that's why we ask you guys to write directly to us at
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.